Surprise, surprise, we're talking about delegation and hiring once again, guys, but we're going to keep drilling this point home. This is such a fundamental and crucial step to you growing your coaching business from a solo venture to something that can truly make a huge impact and leave a legacy, not only for yourself, but for the people who work in your team. My guest today, Tanika D'Souza, she has hired a lot of people in her time from her first business, having over 100 employees about 15 years ago now. She now runs a coaching business, a video marketing agency, and high-octane teams, helping people to hire and fill their teams with remote, offshore, and virtual workers. So we dug into it today. We dug into a whole bunch of stuff around the tangibles of hiring people overseas and how to create great company culture virtually, but also the other stuff you don't talk about, like how the $100,000 market in a business isn't all it's cracked up to be, and maybe that's just a starting step, but how you have to get there no matter what. Tanika is a wonderful, wonderful lady, full of faith, and we touch on that as well and how her religion has helped her in her day-to-day running of the business. Really, really beautiful conversation with a woman who I'd love to spend more time with. So I really hope you enjoy it, guys. Here is Tanika D'Souza on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we're heading to Washington, D.C. for the very first time today to speak with Tanika D'Souza, who has stayed up past 9 p.m. for this podcast, which as a parent just sounds unimaginable to me to do something by choice after 9 p.m., at least after the age of 31. Tanika runs multiple businesses, including High Octane Teams, which is a staffing and hiring company. She's got a coaching business. Her husband and her run some video marketing together. And generally, she is a lady who knows what's what. And she's been running businesses since the year I finished high school. So that's coming as a compliment, by the way, Tanika, not as a dig. How are you? So glad to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, and welcome to DC. You get a little taste of it. Yes, it is late here. We are in summer. You guys are in what you're calling winter. So it's a lot of differences going on. And I am a mom, but my kids are older, so they literally just play on their phones, talk to their friends. They don't need me at late at night, so I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah, I guess the late night things are, can you please pick me up from this party?
Oh, yes. I just picked her up.
Terrifying. Terrifying stuff. As a dad of two girls, I'm not looking forward. Obviously, I'm looking forward to every day in some ways, but I'm not really sure how sort of 16 to 19 is going to go, because I probably wasn't the easiest kid at that age myself. Give me some pearls of wisdom before we jump into business, Tanika. Your daughter, is that the 24-year-old or the 18-year-old?
So I have three kids. Daughter 24, son 18, and youngest daughter 16, going into her junior year of high school.
Okay, sweet. So how are we navigating?
Only the 16-year-old home. My son plays college football, so he left early August for football. And my oldest has her own home out of state about 12 hours away. So
you must be very proud.
I am. I'm super proud, Mom.
That's great. You know what's funny about America versus Australia is in Australia, everyone goes to college or university basically in the city where they live, and they live at home, and you know, you make no money while you're at university. So everyone kind of works in a local shop, lives at home with mom and dad, gets the train kind of like 40 minutes into the city. But in America, everyone seems to just go across as far away as possible from their parents for 4 years.
Yeah. My oldest was about 4.5 hours from home, so it was still a car ride. And my son is about 3.5 hours. So it's nice because I can go to his college football games and really just drive there and drive back if I want to in one day. But yeah, they're not super far, but staying at home while you're in college is not a part of the American college idea.
No, I'm sure it definitely creates a lot more self-sufficiency, a lot more ambition. I think that I went to university for like 6 weeks in Australia. Wasn't for me, but I know that whether or not it is the style of education that we do here or the fact that I live in a nice-ish part of Sydney and it's, you know, borderline impossible to rent, let alone buy anywhere without a very, very big salary and lots of savings. I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, everyone seems to just start life a little bit later here. And it could be the modern world. Like, your 24-year-old owns a home. That's not happening in most states. But you also talked about this before, which is very interesting and brings me on to one of the first things I want to touch on quickly for context, because we're going to talk about coaches today. And while you do have your hiring and staffing company, you also coach yourself. And I asked you about your 100K challenge, where you're helping and empowering women to reach 100K turnover in their business. Yes. And you interestingly said to me that if you don't make $100,000 in Washington, D.C., you're basically broke.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty intense thing. Now, when you say that, are you talking about a $100,000 bring home salary or turnover in the business that then pays for staff and, you know, expenses?
What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. It really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
So what we're experiencing in the U.S. right now is, one, our minimum wage is really high. So if you're a kid, like my 16-year-old daughter, she has a job over the summer. She makes $15 an hour.
Great.
U.S., right? So that's a decent amount of money, but that's like a baseline salary. That's what you're paying a child. So if you start thinking about any adult with any kind of skills or experience, you're going to pay them a lot more money. So the employment market here is just really crazy. So people are demanding very high salary, but the cost of living in Washington, D.C. specifically is really, really high. So there's tons of places where you can live in other parts of the U.S. that are a lot cheaper than living here. But when you live in one of the major cities, and I believe this is, you know, all over the world, right? There's certain cities that are definitely more expensive to live in. We just happen to have a lot of those in the U.S. And if you're not making six figures, it's really hard to survive because, like, your rent, your car notes, like all the basic utilities, you're probably going to need at least about 60K just to take care of that. So if you want to now raise kids and, you know, live a little more comfortably and eat a little better, you definitely need to be hitting more income. So it's just really expensive. And I just try to help people to get out of the mindset of survival and really getting into that place of thriving, right? So whether it's in your personal life or in your business, stop doing just the bare minimum to get by and figure out, like, what does it take to optimize? What does it take to grow? What does it take to thrive so that you can live your own life, right? For a long time, I owned a bakery. Mm-hmm. And that was just literally blood, sweat, tears, like cutting myself, like injury, like anything could happen, right? In a commercial kitchen, lots of hours. I had locations open in malls, so I was open every single day, every hour the mall was open. I had four locations, one franchise, and that's just locations. And then you still have kitchen, drivers, inventory staff, admin staff. It was just crazy. But the thing that I could have done was played small and just tried to bake cakes myself, take only orders that I could fill. Instead, I thought bigger about how can I employ people? How can I, like, take what I'm making and, like, magnify this process and magnify the experience for more people? And so that's what I help people do as far as a coaching mentality. It's, one, a financial goal of thinking to at least that $100,000, but also you thinking outside of yourself and you growing and you really affecting your community. Because if you think about it, if I have 4 locations open, that's around the clock, tons of jobs, right? And I'm hiring different skills and management levels, all of that. So I feel like it's my responsibility as an entrepreneur to not just service myself and my family, but to make money to also increase jobs and to affect other people as well.
I totally, totally love that, because I'm at this point now in my business, and frequent listeners of the podcast, shout out to you, Mum. They'll know that I'm at a point now where, like, 3 years ago, it was me, laptop, marketing for people. I managed my clients by myself. Now I've got about 13 staff, like 8 of whom are full time. And for lack of a better word, I'm shitting myself because all the time, just like the amount of income that comes in just needs to flow into so many more people and support so many more families. But in that, I get so jazzed up by the fact that, you know, it's, you know, it is supporting other people's families and lives. And, you know, so as the business grows, I'm certainly not paying myself more right now. I'm just paying more people. And it's really, really exciting. It will one day lead to those freedoms. But I love the way that you're thinking. So when you're coaching people to grow, that's one of the main things, is it? Just saying, you know, you're not going to create freedom by working from your laptop in your front room. You've got to actually think bigger, expand, and that's going to get you there. It's not the whole, you know, Instagram, I have a 7-figure econ business from my laptop and now I'm in a pool, that sort of thing. That doesn't seem realistic to me anymore.
So I'm going to challenge it, because I'm all about the work from anywhere lifestyle. Anybody who follows me knows that I literally travel all the time. So I just have all my business portable, right? When I coach, we just get on Zoom. I can do that from DC, Australia, Germany. It doesn't matter. You don't have to care where I am. I probably have to wake up in the middle of the night. But either way, the timing, you know, like what you can do, I feel like we have way more options now than we did before. Nobody's kind of limited to a traditional job anymore. You literally can create what it is you really want to do and add your piece to the world. And it's not realistic to have anything that you don't work for. Right. So if you just think I'm going to record a few videos and now all of a sudden you're going to have hundreds of thousands of subscribers on YouTube, like that's not how it works. Like you definitely have to have marketing strategy and all those things. But are people making a lot of money on YouTube? Absolutely. They're making money on all the social media platforms, to be honest. And by doing other things like drop shipping, because my son does that. So he literally is like touching no products. He has his own staff doing most of the work, and he's there playing college football with a student income more than what I know adult people with families make. So all things are possible. That's my thing. I just want you to commit to something and stick with it until you've made at least $100,000. And then we can talk about like really revving the engine, right?
I think that's important. I think that's very well put. And we definitely do, with this entrepreneurial spirit, we get that shiny object syndrome where we hear,
yes,
hang on, Tanika's son's doing drop shipping. I forgot about drop shipping.
Yes.
Maybe I'll go and do that. You know, wait a second, yes, there's a new, so what, Threads, maybe I'll be the first person to advertise on Threads or whatever, you know. I had an idea this morning. I saw a business on Instagram where it was like just guys at a wedding going around shucking oysters, putting dressing on them, and then giving them to people like from a little ice bucket. I thought, that is freaking awesome, because I came from catering as well. I've never seen like a live, okay, oyster shucker. So I messaged my friend who was an event planner. I was like, surely no one's doing this in Australia. She goes, like, heaps of people do that. That's already a business. So, but we can't help but have that shiny object syndrome and just saying, make 100 grand first, you know, that's 10 grand a month. That is sustainable-ish, you know, and that,
yes,
that's a start. Don't think about anything else until, yes, you've done that.
Absolutely. And the thing that I find is that's where you have the most challenges. That first $100,000 in your business is the most unsure, the most insecure you're ever going to feel. It's when you're building up your clientele. You don't even know if your offers are good or if they suck. And you'll know because nobody's buying them, right? So it's like when you're doing all of the experiment, all the experimenting that's necessary to get your business off the ground. So to me, it's like that's some people feel like, oh, I'm going to wait until I'm making this certain amount of money before I get coaching, right? Because you're a coach, I coach people, and that's not the way it works. You're making the biggest decisions earlier in the business that help you build the confidence, build the clientele, build that email list, build your social media following, and you're going to do it on what? Like whatever you're just imagining every night when you go to sleep. Like that's not, to me, that's not the smartest idea. I know tons of people do it all the time, but at least follow podcasts like this or, you know, help yourself and teach yourself along the way, but don't just believe that you're going to magically figure this all out on your own. So I'm a strong believer that that first 100,000 is really a tough time. And when you need a coach that can really listen and hear beyond what you're able to even express, because you don't know, and able to give you guidance. So I do business and life coaching, because you can imagine, especially you're a parent with young kids, sometimes it's like teaching you to balance your life first, right? Before you can do some of that business stuff. So I do a lot of that with my clients.
I love that. Absolutely incredible. And the the coaching thing I think is huge, and it is scary to invest in mentors and coaches before you've got the consistent income, but it's also basically essential, I think. Not necessarily, you know, a coach in the sense that we talk about it now, but just having some form of mentor or proven system that it's been done before, because let's face it, most people aren't reinventing the wheel too much. We don't have that many Steve Jobses. Most people are, you know, doing a business model that's been done before. And there's a guy at the moment who's very much in vogue, Alex Hormozi, who's
I know Alex.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I think he's cool. And he said this thing that I heard once, where he said, "I had no money in my account till I had $1 million in my account." And that makes me feel better, because I always feel like, oh God, I'm just, here I am investing again. And here I am, you know, there's another X amount of dollars that I could just feel confident with, and I've just given it to someone else to grow, you know, in the hopes of growing. But I think that constantly doing that sort of thing, scarily investing, is great. I'd love you to tell me about one of the, you know, scary investment you've made that's paid off.
Scary investment. So maybe I can tie in what you just said, because Alex Hormozi is actually a part of a coaching group that I belong to. So you can imagine that paying to be in that room and coached by Alex and his wife, and like hearing the inside stories of how they built their business, you know, outside of just the books that they have, right? And some of the teachings. So I would say when I started to pay for more expensive masterminds and coaching, that was a little further, you know, in my entrepreneurial journey, but that was probably the scariest, because the first was about a 20K program. And I was like, oh, I'm going to spend all this money. But everything that I learned and my confidence, like I literally took everything as I was learning it, and I was making my money back. So I think coaching, even though I am a coach, that's why I believe in it, has probably been one of the bigger investments that I've made, that I would say is like now when I'm making any moves, I get a coach like specifically to help me with that.
Great. Great. So you're in the room with Hormozi and Layla every now and then.
Yep.
That's great.
And I'll be with them in possibly in January. They come to this big conference that we have in the US called Traffic and Conversion. Mm-hmm. And after that conference is when we have the mastermind. So everybody else goes home, we stay, and it's like a whole like brain dump.
Love it.
Of all, you know, we've learned so much from the conference, but then you get all this extra.
That's great. I feel a little bit of, you know, synchronicity with Alex Hormozi in that we both are bearded men named Alex. And generally, when I'm not on this podcast, I am wearing the flannel shirt and shorts nearly all the time and a cap because it's just easier, you know. So that's great. Okay, awesome. Mentoring, coaching, and helping out your clients with thinking bigger and expanding. I'd love to just quickly touch on something I noticed on your social media. You had a few hashtags, and one of them was like, I can't remember what it was. It was like faith blogger or faith based or something like that.
Yes.
I'm not involved in my sister is a, I guess she's like a minister, or, you know, she's a chaplain in a prison, but she's like got all that training as well. I'm not, mm-hmm. I don't practice, but I'd love to know that, you know, from a point of view, from an entrepreneur, this is not an easy path we've chosen to take. How do you believe your faith helps you out and drives you forwards on days when it gets pretty rocky in the business space?
That is a great question, and one that I think people ignore. So I am also a minister, and I've done a ton of work running a church, all kinds of different things. I don't have a church currently. But I do have a minister's background, so I am very more Christian based in my approach to life, to like anything that I put my hands to. The thing that I find as far as religion is concerned and how it kind of overlaps with entrepreneurship is the fact that a lot of people feel called to do certain things. They feel like they've prayed for a solution, maybe a financial solution, and then they are given these really grand ideas, but then they don't know how to apply anything business to get it done. And so I think that there's a blend of not just like hearing from God and understanding what you're called to do, but also understanding that you need to find resources to get those things done, right? So I feel like I kind of help people understand what they were called to do. And even if you understand that, you still have to put some natural boots to the ground, get it done kind of work. Like you can't just pray your way to your first $100,000. Has it happened? Probably so. You know, probably somebody woke up, got his $100,000, one client, one contract, and that was amazing. Most of us, we're gonna learn a ton of lessons along the way. And so I do encourage people to read the Bible, pray, or, you know, whatever your faith is asking you to do to stay connected that way, because it also gives you a different level of strength and like your faith, like activating your faith towards your business is such a big deal. So I find that understanding how faith and entrepreneurship blend is you understanding what you were called to do, using practical business resources to get it done, and being thankful that those things are working in your favor. Because we know a lot of businesses fail, and just because you prayed about it doesn't mean that you're instantly going to be successful.
Beautiful. Yeah, so, you know, I don't like to make comparisons, but coming from the outside, looking into any form of religion and spirituality, it does sound like a similar approach to people who talk about manifestation and asking the universe for things, is that some people will sit there Rhonda Byrne style and write, you know, $1 million on a piece of paper and then bring it to me and then do nothing about it. But what you're saying is that this faith gives you the intuition and the kind of the confidence that what you're doing is the right path, but then you still got to go and put in the action and the skills to make it happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I tell people, pray for the right resources, pray for a direction that's going to, you know, get you moving. But you're going to, like entrepreneurship, there's really not a lot of ways you're going to skip learning the hard lessons. Like you have to learn how to get over yourself and leave solopreneurship if you want to grow. You know, both of us have teams. If you want to expand, if you really want to get your message out, if you want to increase your income, like there's all these different lessons that we have to learn. And I don't think your spirituality causes you to skip those lessons because they're important and valuable to build you as a person. The same way that trusting, you know, spiritually that things are going to happen for you. Like it's like trust, but also learn.
Yeah, I missed the end of that last sentence, but I know exactly where you were going. You froze up a little bit. Love it. I love it. And it definitely would help on the harder days. And yeah.
Yes.
So my sister says this to me all the time. She's always trying to bring me into the fold. And she uses words like that. You know that you've got someone in your corner always, no matter what you're doing, which is yes. A beautiful, beautiful sentiment and something that I kind of wish I was better at getting on board with. So, thanks for that. Really, really cool that you managed to run a church alongside three businesses and a family.
The church was earlier than, the church was earlier than the businesses. But yes, I feel like even church is a business to a degree, right? You're still doing God's work, but there's like a ton of business that goes into church. And so I actually started doing consulting for churches because a lot of them were really great at ministering, but horrible. Like the underbelly was terrible. And so just putting systems in place, that's actually where I started doing some of my first and early coaching.
Well, you got to keep the lights on, right? You got to pay for the projector. You got to pay for the keyboard.
It's little things and they skip it because what is more important to them is, you know, talking to the people and being involved in their lives. And that can be a lot, but there's always a business side of it as well that has to be managed.
Just like running a family, running a church, running a business. It's all the same thing. There's a big idea about impact and love, but then under the surface, the cogs have to keep on moving. And I know that for you, you've been trying to direct the conversation every now and then back towards your company, High Octane Teams, because I want to as well, because it is a really, really cool topic. We touch on a lot on this podcast, hiring and where to do so. You touched on before how expensive it can be to hire even, you know, minimum wage roles in America for brick and mortar businesses. And I noticed that your company is a lot about hiring virtual teams,
yes,
international teams, that sort of thing. And yes, there's like price comparisons on your website. And so everyone knows, you know, that you can hire in the Philippines and you're going to get someone who is going to be a lower hourly rate. And a lot of my teams in the Philippines, and they are, you know, far more talented and hardworking than I am. And so I love them to absolute bits. But something that I get, you know, I've had come up a few times lately when I've recommended clients of mine go and find a virtual assistant overseas, that sort of thing, is them saying, I don't feel right hiring someone just because they're cheaper, or I don't feel right, you know, just trying to find someone who I pay so little. And I'd love to hear your take on that, because I obviously see it differently. So what's your take on the fact that, you know, hiring overseas is mostly a financial and cost-cutting decision?
So I'm going to tell you a story, and my husband's going to be so proud of me because he leads everything with stories, right? And I just get to the point, right? But the story is, I just recently found a journal early in my entrepreneurial journey. So I've been an entrepreneur for over 14 years. And one of the bigger things that I wanted to do was to be an employer. I really wanted to affect other people's lives by being able to give them a job. So as I described earlier, I had that bakery. That's where I supplied the most jobs that I've ever supplied, because every single year I had over 100 employees. Not hard to do when you have mall employees, You always have tons of turnover there. But then all my kitchen staff, drivers, seasonal workers, like it was just crazy. But 100 a year average and more most years. But the thing that is happening for me now is when I realize the impact that I make hiring internationally, right? So yes, you can say this person's on this job board and they only ask for $3 an hour or $5 an hour. That's ridiculous, especially when I just shared that my 16-year-old daughter makes $15 an hour because that's the minimum wage in my city, right? So 16 years old, in high school, $15, but now you're gonna pay this person who has skills, $5. What we're missing here is how that money translates in that culture. So I hire as well a lot from the Philippines. I currently have under 30 hired, like kind of on my bigger team. But the thing that I recognized very early in our time of hiring offshore is that makes a huge difference for them, right? That $15 an hour for my daughter, she's gonna buy coffee drinks and go to the movies with her friends. Like she's not making a big dent in her life with that $15, but that $5 for them or $8 or even some of them making $3, you're making a huge impact on their life. Very early in hiring, I would hear one of the young ladies was a single mom, and she said that she was finally able to make enough money and save, and so she could move her kids to a safer neighborhood. Like, come on, right? She got to move to a safer neighborhood. When she got there, she was doing well with us. She got a raise. She moved to a bigger space. She now has a washer and dryer in her place as a single mom, which is like amazing because now she doesn't have to manage her two boys leaving the home, all these different things. Like she can do laundry in her house. And these are things that I take for granted, right? I have laundry near my master bedroom. Like, you know, it's like, I don't think about laundry. I just go drop it in. I hear the thing go off. You know, there's so many things that we have that are luxuries that are not basic in other places. And so I look at it from a different perspective. I'm empowering them to change their life financially, change their children's life. A lot of them are now able to pay their school fees for their kids so their kids can go to a better school. Like there's so many things that I hear repeatedly about how their lives are changed. And we think it's a small amount to pay, like $5, $8 an hour, but it's a huge amount and a huge difference maker for them.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I love to hear that. And that's a wonderful story about that young lady. And I agree. And I'm on the same page completely. But as someone that's your, you know, bread and butter, excuse the bakery analogy, that is, I figured you'd have lots of, you know, a great opinion on that one as well. And the thing with business, I understand, well, I guess these days, is that so much of it is remote and virtual. Once you've got, once you help your clients at high octane teams to build their team, what sort of advice do you give them on, you know, creating excitement, creating culture when everyone's basically sitting at home in their bedrooms on their laptops?
That is probably the biggest challenge. So that's something that I do in agency, that whether you're doing it, let's say you hired one of my virtual staff. When you hire my staff, they are a part of my team. I have a chief of staff. She's actually Filipino. So they can speak their own native language to make sure that I'm meeting their need the way that they know how to express it best, right? All of my staff can speak English fluently and work with a lot of US-based companies, but we do have companies all over the globe. So one, I have kind of geared my company to include them and to make them feel comfortable. Two, every quarter we do quarterly dinners where we bring everybody together. So they're all working for different companies, but we pay, we send them money, and we want them to have dinner with their family, and we pick a theme. And they pick the craziest themes, like Italian. I'm like, you guys are in the Philippines with all this great food, but you want Italian night? Like, you know, and not that Italian is bad, but just more like we pick a theme. Everyone buys like all this over the top Italian food. We're talking about it. And then we have like movies together and things like that. So it creates like, not only am I getting to know my staff, but I'm getting to know their families and the reason why they work, you know, for me and like who they're supporting. Outside of that, we really know our staff, meaning like one person is currently taking care of her mom and we know that. And so if there's things going on with them, we get more personally involved in their life. So they feel like they not only have a job, but they have like a support and a family. I just recently launched wellness programs for my staff. So we give them a monthly stipend toward fruits and vegetables and produce. And we talk about like, what's the, you know, the seasonal produce for them and for me. And then we're talking about smoothie recipes and keeping our bodies healthy. One, because if I invest in their health, I'm getting better staff. But they also, again, feel like they work for a place that cares about them. And so to me, that's the advantage of, they didn't necessarily ask for a whole lot of money to be paid, but here's all these other ways that I can invest in their life that keeps them kind of glued in to the company. So that's how I build company culture. I decided the things that I cared about, and what I cared about was helping them live a better life. So whether that was physical, like we give them money when it's their kids' birthday for their kids, like college fund. So we do all these different things to invest into them. The challenge that I see for most companies is they don't think beyond what is the work you're going to do and how can I just give you a good review? How can I give you a once a year bonus? And they feel like because they did that, that makes them these like amazing managers. Most people have no idea how to build company culture, what it should include, and how to, you know, actually implement it. Where on the other hand, I'm like trying to go all in on building up my virtual assistant. So for example, Alex, if you had one of my staff and you said you no longer needed them, they would still work with me and I would find them another placement because they belong to this community. And every employer should think of their staff that way, that people want to belong to your company. So there's a ton we can talk about company culture, because I feel like this is the main reason agency is a good choice, because it helps you with those kind of things. And I think most people just really, really suck at it.
Not easy. No one teaches you how to do it. You know, you start a business.
You don't.
Like in, what's that book? The book where the, you know, with the bakery in it.
The E-Myth.
Yeah. Where, you know, we start off like a craftsperson because we're good at a thing, or a technician because we're good at, you know, you were good at baking. Yes. You were good at baking cakes, and I'm decent at like writing and making graphics. But no one teaches you how to, you know, hire staff. I was quite lucky because I had a cafe, you know, 10 years ago. And in the cafe, it was quite easy to basically hire someone to make coffee when we were a bit too busy. And then there were like three or four of us, and that was relatively easy, but not a very complex business model. But hiring is a scary first step, because firstly, the financial thing, that can be kind of wiped off the table by hiring offshore, which is great. Training is one thing that not everyone's taught how to do. I know I have a good friend now, he's got maybe 30, 40 staff, and I do not believe he's very good at it at all. He's got two very successful businesses, but I used to work with him, and this guy struggles with staff retention always, because he pays them really well, and he takes them out for dinners and stuff like that, but just like communication training was really kind of lackluster. No one teaches you how to do it. And then what scares me is people coming to work, and then because I don't have the systems in place to actually make sure they've got a great, you know, a lot of stuff to do, they're sitting there feeling unfulfilled, not useful, bored. And that's actually scary for me as well. So, yeah, that's, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. And, you know, it's, there's so much stuff to talk about. I suppose I really, really enjoy the fact that you're talking about like company culture, because I suppose that is something that people need to think about a lot more as their team grows. But you first need to circle back to the beginning of the conversation, get out of the headspace that this is going to be a solopreneurial endeavor. Because you don't really think about company culture when you're starting by yourself, do you? You think about, okay, yeah, I can take my laptop down to the beach and have a coffee and an acai bowl while I do my coaching calls for the week. And then you take your phone, another day at the office, lol. And then that's kind of how it is. So I suppose... not so much of a question, but that's just a thought from my end that, yeah, it's a scary, scary journey. What would you say to people who are thinking of getting that, you know, first full-time skilled staff member on their team, but they're really struggling to make that jump?
So especially in the coaching space, a very easy first hire is going to be like your executive assistant or just an admin assistant. Somebody who's going to help you manage the mundane tasks that have to get done, right? So that doesn't take mentally a whole lot. Like you're not training another coach. You're not giving away your trade secrets. You're literally having them like send email reminders or, you know, reply with basic information when your clients have questions, you know, things like that, or even organize your emails so that you can be more efficient when it's time for you to respond. Like, you know exactly what's needed and you can get those things done. So I think that is a very easy first step. The biggest struggle I see, though, is a lot of people say that they have a business. But in my opinion, you are a business owner when you have a system that actually works for you. So if you are a solopreneur with an actual business, you are running the system, right? Where what most people are is they're solopreneurs who are winging it every day. You have no systems in place. You don't have a process for how to actually attract your ideal client, how to speak their language, how to onboard them to your program. You might have the basic stuff, like your website is up, they can click the link, they can pay, they can book to be on your calendar, but after that, you're literally just kind of making it up as you go. Some people have the next step. Here's my proprietary system. That's in your brain. And you customize it for every single person, and you call that a really great thing because you're customizing, you're a coach, and you know, you don't just give people cookie cutter stuff and you're proud of it. But what you don't have is a system that you can then bring other people on board to help you run. You don't have an engine. So my company is intentionally called High Octane Teams because you need an engine that's gonna run and perform well. I love cars, I like engines, I like powerful stuff, I drive SUVs, and I will get the biggest engine possible, except I also like hybrids and electrics. So I'm at a dilemma right now, right? But the point is, you don't have systems. So I can help you build those systems, or you need to start hiring someone who's going to write SOPs, pull all this stuff out of your head, you know, and actually help you start building a business so that you can run it more efficiently and build it to the income level that you want.
Do you want to stay until midnight and dig into creating systems for a business? Because my goodness, Tanika, that's what a rabbit hole you've just opened up. But for one little tangible tip for people that I've just gotten off the back of what you just said, systemizing, because taking a system out of your head and giving it to your team, Whoa, big one. What I do is basically every time I need to do a new thing for a client that no one else knows how to do yet, I just do a screen recording on Loom and then just send that off to one guy and he turns it into an SOP, standard operating procedure. So we've got like a Google document with the steps. You can also go to ChatGPT and just say, hey, what is, you know, how do I set up a Stripe account? That sort of thing. And then it just does that. We take that, customize it, brand it up. SOP, everyone in the business knows how to do it now. So, Tanika.
So I'm gonna take you one more step because you have done like what so many people just struggle to do, right? So it's in your head. Do the recording. Allow somebody else who knows how to write an SOP write it for you.
Oh yeah.
Next thing is storing it properly and actually using it, right? Because people write SOPs and they sit in the computer and nobody uses it. So make sure it's being used. We use a system called Guru, G-U-R-U, and that is actually a storage for SOPs. So it helps you organize it, keep everything straight, because the last thing you want to do, Alex, is get it out of your head, forgot you did that, and basically do it over a second time, and you're likely to do it differently. So now you have conflicting things, right? So here you just build your library in Guru, and everybody can access it. You say if it's something simple like email management or calendar management, everybody gets that. But if it's video editing, that only goes in production team or whatever, wherever it belongs in your organization. So that's like my next step to keep it all organized and to use it, right? Don't just get it out your head, use it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I went yesterday. We had a, you know, I've got a new lady working on building ads and she had to do a new tech thing. So I searched how to build a custom conversion in my screen recordings. And I had like three videos called that, all from like 6 months apart. So I've clearly done exactly what you told me not to do and just redone things as time goes on. What a beautiful, beautiful, implementable piece of advice to finish off the podcast. Because while I am having the time of my life talking to you, Tanika, it's late at night. It's late at night for you. And I want you to preserve that beautiful energy and voice for your business and your family tomorrow. So, it's been a real, real pleasure talking to you tonight for you. And really hope you've enjoyed your time on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex. And hopefully you'll get to meet Alex Harmozzi. That might be a really great thing for you.
I think he might be...
Come over to the U.S. in January.
Well, I've been invited to the U.S. a couple times this year, but it's just like, it's hard enough to get, you know, a night off to go and see the football and leave my wife with 2-3-year-olds, let alone traveling over to Los Angeles or wherever it is. So I'm cool with that part of my life coming in a few years' time, to be honest.
Yeah. And that's the luxury that I have now because my kids are older. So it's just, my 16-year-old, she can stay with my mom when I'm traveling. So it works out really nice.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I reckon
when they were little, I was not doing this.
No, for sure. And I'm fine with that. I've got friends who are all, you know, a little bit younger than me or childless, and they're just moving at astronomical speeds in business. And I'm cool where I'm at, you know, moving forward slowly, slowly, and just knowing that I've probably got 4 or 5 years where my kids think I'm the center of the universe. And then from there it'll just gradually, I'll become less and less important to them. So, in a sense. So yeah, really, really cool advice. It's been wonderful having you on, Tanika. And, I think people will get a lot of joy and a lot of knowledge out of this show. So I can't thank you enough.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
You're awesome. And you're awesome for listening. Anyone who is there right now or indeed on the recording, we love you to bits for that. I'll be back next week with one or two more guests on Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thank you for listening. Much love and peace out.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.